on, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Winston Gallery Place podcast. Brendan and Damo back in the show, and it is June 21st, Wednesday, the day before tomorrow's NBA 2023 draft on a Thursday. So we're going to give you our final pre-draft thoughts, recap some stuff from the fallout of the Beal trade and anything and everything. This isn't an episode where we had much of a itinerary, I guess. It's just going to be kind of babble and talk about stuff. But Damo and I didn't get a chance to talk. He was with his family over the holiday weekend, so didn't want to pull him away to have this talk. But man, Sunday was interesting. We finally got the news that Bradley Beal was going to be going to Phoenix. 6 second round picks, Landry Shamet, Chris Paul. They're still trying to work out the deal to see if they want to expand it. But, you know, I think this was a really good opportunity for them to move off from Brad. I don't think that they wanted to keep him around, but I'll have you give your thoughts since I pretty much spent my last couple podcasts talking about this. So we'll get your thoughts on this quickly and then we'll move on to the draft.
Yeah, so my first initial thought, so all of this was happening while I was just out and about, you know, in the city with the family and stuff. So, like, I saw it and I was like, what the f-? Like, just the idea that the Suns had came in, had swooped in, you know, because I always say there's always a surprise team, right? Because from everything I saw, it seemed like it was Philly, it was the Heat, and maybe a team in Cali. And it turns out, and then I said a surprise team, and then that surprise team ended up being the Suns, a team that probably had the least amount of assets out of anyone, because they gave up all of their stuff to get KD, you know, 5 months ago. So it was just like, whoa, like, what the hell? Like, what could they possibly have offered? It's a three-team deal. So then when I look and I see it's a bunch of seconds and Chris Paul and Landry Shamet, I'm like, oh, that's got to be the no trade clause, because it's just no goddamn way that was the best deal on the table. For a three-time All-Star guy that averaged 30 a game back-to-back seasons just 2 years ago. So, following the tea leaves, reading all the reports and leaks and all of that, from what I'm gathering, it was the no trade clause. Like, Beal did not want to go anywhere else. It was the Suns all the way through. He wanted to get West, and the Suns with Devin Booker and KD, the Wizards just had no leverage. So you couldn't even entertain the Heat possibly giving you two picks in filler or a pick in Hero or maybe the Kings and whatever they had or any of that. Like, it didn't even matter. Like, the Spurs could have offered the number one damn pick and it wouldn't have mattered, because right. Beal wanted to go to Phoenix and right. You had to take whatever the hell they had.
Right. Which wasn't anything, because they gave up all their assets to get Kevin Durant. So they had essentially nothing left over. Beal knew that. And at the end of the day, it just, again, like you said, it didn't matter what our front office thought. At the end of the day, it was essentially going to be Beal's decision, and the Suns did, or the Wizards did what they thought they could get back. And we knew it was either going to be one of Chris Paul or DeAndre Ayton and then Landry Shamet and whatever draft picks they can offer. And that's what we got. So not a hard deal to figure out. Again, we'll see what happens with Chris Paul. They're still trying to work out some details on this trade, maybe to try and expand it to get him to a contender. Mainly the Clippers have been the big team to watch out for in terms of that. But nothing imminent there. I mean, that's literally all we know right now. I don't think there's been any other reports. It's just that they'd like to expand the offer and get Chris Paul to a contender, and the teams to watch out for, the Clippers and the Lakers, mostly the Clippers. Outside of that, we don't have any more information on that, so hard to speculate. But anyway, transitioning over from Bradley Beal and going into tomorrow's NBA draft. There have been a lot of rumors that have come out the past couple of days. Mainly Cam Whitmore may fall a little bit. Anthony Black's stock seems to be going up a little bit. I think Bilal Coulibaly's stock is going up a little bit. Still seeing a lot of Max Lewis in the late first round, which I want to get your thoughts on. And we'll get into all this draft talk now. But what's your feeling now? We're a day away from it. One more sleep and then we're there. And tomorrow it could get all kinds of crazy with trades. And who knows if someone shakes up the board early on. But should be a fun day tomorrow.
Yeah, man, I'm excited, man. I haven't been this excited for a draft in a long time. I just think it's so much depth here, especially at the wings, wing and guard. Really, like, it's just so much depth. Like, there are guys that are gonna go second round that could have gone first round in plenty other drafts. So it's just all about your scouts and finding those guys, because I think this draft has an opportunity to provide, you know, a few all-stars in addition to some really a handful, more than a handful of really quality role players, man, that stick around in this league for a while. So yeah, I'm excited. I think, you know, just all of the rumors and things I've been seeing, man, I think the board is going to fall pretty good for the Wizards. Like, I think at 8, if they stay there, like, I think they got a shot at a guy that can be really impactful for them. You know, kind of where, like, the kind of the opposite of last year, where I felt like if you didn't get into that top 6, you weren't going to get that guy unless you took a, you know, took a swing on somebody like a Jalen Williams, right? But this draft, I feel like you can get a guy at 8. So I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing to take away. They're really, again, unless the Wizards shock people and take someone like Grady Dick or like Gigi Jackson or something like that, you know, I mean, there's going to be plenty of guys on the board still left at 8 where you can consider that the pick a success for the Wizards. And I think that the one thing that makes it interesting is now that they're going in the direction of a rebuild, even though that's not what they'll call it. But all positions are on the table. Like, yeah, we needed a point guard at the time, assuming that the big three and Tommy were going to come back, and you can still go point guard. But now that Beal's gone, Kuzma and KP are expected to be gone at some point. Either way, I don't think you build the team around them, even if they're back. So this any position now is available to be selected. I think that if Tommy were still here, we would have taken a point guard, whether that be Cason Wallace or Anthony Black, and they would have called it a day. However, now, I mean, you can seriously legit consider taking a two guard, and there's a lot of talented two guards here at the top of the board. You could go wing. You could, you know, we said that we wouldn't go big, but you know, maybe you could talk yourself into Jairus Walker or Taylor Hendricks. Maybe not you for Taylor Hendricks, but a lot of people, I think you would be fine with that. That's more of a trade back to me, but either way, still a lot of talent available at number 8, and all positions are on the table essentially now.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, honestly, even when Beal was here, I felt like there was just nobody here that was, to me, was should prevent you from taking a guy no matter what position he played. Because especially now with this new front office, it's like, I mean, are you looking at any of our guys and saying, you know, that's a building block, please? That's a top 2 guy on a contender. If not, then you need to be drafting with the assumption that you don't have that guy. So take the swing, man. Take the swing on a guy that has upside that you can envision. Okay, if we tweak a little bit here, we add some here, we develop here, he could be a top 2 guy on a contender. I would hate the idea of them willingly drafting a role player at number 8 in this draft. I would hate that.
Looking at the top of the board and making our way down, so I think obviously number 1 is a lock. Number 2 and number 3, I'm close to calling it a lock. I would still leave the door a little open. In case this has been a smokescreen, or maybe the Hornets have a last-minute difference of opinion and maybe ownership wins out and they go Scoot. But I think it's going to be Brandon Miller in, at two and Scoot at three. So I'm close to locking that in. I'm just not 100% there yet. And then same thing with Amen Thompson at four to the Rockets. I think James Harden is going to go back to Philadelphia at this point. And that means that Thompson would be a better fit there for the Rockets, given that they're going to be without Harden. Opportunity to have the basketball in his hands and show off his playmaking ability, his athleticism. So I think that, the top four, I'm like 90% sure that that's what those picks are going to be in that order. Wembanyama, Miller, Henderson, and Amen Thompson. So I think you're the same way too with that. I think those would be your top four, and then five is where it starts getting interesting.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. I think the draft starts at pick five. What the hell are the Pistons going to do? You know, are they going to go Jairus Walker? Are they going to go Cam Whitmore? Are they going to go Oscar Thompson? I mean, they can go so many different ways. So yeah, I think the draft starts with the Pistons at five.
We've heard a lot of rumors recently that Cam Whitmore's stock may be falling a little bit because maybe he hasn't necessarily worked out the best. I never really thought that highly of him watching his highlights and stuff. And I definitely still think he's a top eight, top nine guy in this draft. But to say he's always been a lock at five, positionally, I think it makes sense talent wise. You know, some could argue maybe or maybe not. But the thing with the Pistons pick here is they already have Cunningham and Ivy. So if they like a guard, it really doesn't fit. And how often have we said, and even executives have acknowledged, like, you, if you just take the best player, but you already have two pillars of your franchise that are playing the same position, you're not really getting the best value out of those guys. So maybe this is an opportunity where we see a trade back here at number five. But I mean, I still think Whitmore makes the most sense. If it were my decision for the Pistons, I think I would still go Whitmore, but I definitely consider a trade back here. But again, positionally, this is the guy, and where his talent level is, this is the guy that makes the most sense for them, I think.
Yeah, I'm just looking at their roster, and I'm just kind of like, okay, if Cade and Ivy are your backcourt of the future, you're looking at Duren, Wiseman, centers. I think the question marks kind of lie in the middle of your five, your starting five, at the forward spots, at the three and the four. So to me, see, Jairus Walker, I could see, but it's like, I feel like he's redundant with Isaiah Stewart.
Yeah.
Kind of got similar builds. They kind of played the same type of game. I just feel like that's kind of redundant. Like, I think Cam Whitmore, or even if they went Osser, I could see that as more of a skill set that they don't have at those forward spots. So, and then with I've always leaned Cam Whitmore just because of the local ties with the general manager Troy Weaver, and now their new head coach Monty Williams, who are DMV guys. Cam Whitmore is a DMV guy, so I think I'm going to stick with that. I think it's going to be Cam Whitmore at five.
Yeah, I mean, I could, again, you could see them taking Jairus Walker. You could see them going Taylor Hendricks there. Again, five is where the draft starts. It's hard to lock something in, but I think you and I are on the same page there. Like, if you you had to pick someone, I still think it's probably going to be Cam Whitmore. But we'll see. Who knows? Plenty of surprises to come tomorrow night, I'm sure. Moving our way down to number six with Orlando. So their backcourt situation right now is essentially Jalen Suggs, Cole Anthony, Markelle Fultz. I think those are their main three. So neither of those three are stopping me from taking a guard, which is why Asar Thompson may end up being the pick there, but this is another pick where you could see Orlando kind of going in a few different directions.
Yeah, I think, you know, looking at their roster again, you got Wendell Carter at center. You got Paolo at the four. You got Franz theoretically at the three, even though he can handle two. And just the philosophy of that, their team building, it seems like they want as many 6 foot six plus guys that can run pick and roll as possible, similar to what OKC is doing. So for me, this pick seems like Anthony Black to me, like just another guy that is a legitimate pick and roll threat, can run, can kind of elevate Franz and Paolo, because you have two core guys there that you feel like can be top two options on a contender when they fully mature in their games. And Anthony Black just would play off of those guys, I think, perfectly. You know, as a 6'7" point of attack defender, playmaker, gets to the rim at will, and he's an athlete. So I think that's where Anthony Black lands, and it makes a lot of sense for the Magic.
Yeah, I definitely think so too, and that's something in this process. Anthony Black's stock is. Seem to continue to go up and up. So I definitely think that Orlando is going to consider him there at six. And again, I think the pick makes a lot of sense there for Orlando. Again, it's not like they have anyone that's stopping you from taking a guard like that. And again, Jalen Suggs, I think for some odd reason, they kind of view him more as an off-ball kind of guard. Again, I don't get it, but I'm sure there's a thought process there somewhere. So Anthony Black to Orlando at six makes a lot of sense. Indiana at seven. We've heard that Jairus Walker may fall a little bit. We've heard that maybe this is a team where he's gotten a draft promise from them. He would fit next to Miles Turner with his play style. Turner is more of a face up, away from the rim kind of guy. And Jairus Walker, I think, is going to do most of his damage at or around the rim. So the pick there makes a lot of sense. You get an athletic big next to Halliburton, can be a lob threat, will run in transition. I think would be a nice fit there for Indiana at seven. Would it surprise me if they went Taylor Hendricks? Not necessarily, but I think that Walker has the most upside as a player, if that's the term you want to use. I still think that Taylor Hendricks will be a fine NBA player. But, you know, if you like the athletic guys who you're just like, okay, let's just fine-tune a couple of these skills, we'll get your ball handling, we'll work on your shooting a little bit more, then I think obviously at that point you have a more dominating player. So that's what I think Indiana is going to bank on here, and that's why I think Jairus Walker will be the pick at seven to the Pacers.
Yeah, it just seems like the whole time it's been between Jairus and Taylor Hendricks. Just based on how we're running the board now, I would go Jairus, because he just seems like a perfect complement to Miles Turner, who's more of a stretch five. You get a Jairus Walker, who I liken to an Aaron Gordon, who's kind of like, you know, athlete, above the rim guy, with a little bit of playmaking, can defend 3-5 and switch. So I just think that's a perfect complement for Miles Turner and kind of the team that they're building there with Ben Mathurin and Tyrese Halliburton and Buddy Hield. So I think Jairus Walker would be the pick in this case.
Next up are Washington Wizards. So this is where Asar Thompson is still on the board. Are you immediately running to the podium, or are you thinking about a trade back here? If the board fell this way, how would you handle it?
Yeah, I'm running to the podium and I'm taking Asar Thompson. You know, 6'7", elite athlete, got some playmaking, the better shooter of the Thompson twins. I'm running to the podium and I'm going to get me an elite wing prospect, something we haven't had in a long, long time. I can't remember the last time we've brought an elite wing prospect into we've drafted an elite wing prospect for the Wizards. I can't remember the last time it's happened.
Beal, if you consider him a wing?
I consider him more a guard. So okay. I'm thinking king. I'm like, I got to go back to...
Nope, not elite.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, with that type of profile, athletic profile, like, it's just in pedigree coming out of high school, like, I can't think of one.
Yeah. Well, you've got in plenty of wings, just not elite ones. It's crazy because over the years we've had, what, Otto Porter, Kelly Oubre, Troy Brown, Rui, Denny, Kispert. Plenty of wings in the first round, just none of them end up being elite.
Not with this kind of pedigree. You know, five-star guy out of high school, dominating, you know, OTE and playing against some pros and looking still like an elite athlete. Like, he would day one be the best athlete on the Wizards, day one. So, yeah, that I'm running to the podium if he's there at eight.
What? So you wouldn't consider a trade back? Like, if it's to maybe like 10, 11, 12, something like that, if you're not considering that, only dropping, you know, maybe like three or four spots, if he's on the board, you're just taking him there and not thinking about it?
Yeah, I'm taking him.
Yeah, fair enough. And the more and more mocks we've seen as this process has gone on, like Assor has been slowly dropping a little bit. And I don't think that that's anything because of him. I don't think that anything negative has come out about him during the pre-draft process. I just think the fact that Indiana already has their guard spots locked up in a sense. And Anthony Blackstock continuing to go up. I think that's why Assor Thompson, well, at the end of the day, I think he's going to be there tomorrow at pick eight. And I think that's who the Wizards are going to select.
Yeah, I think that would, if he's there, I think that's a dream come true for this front office in a rebuild, because I think Arthur has a chance to be a special wing talent in the league. So, yeah, that would be a young guy that I think the fan base collectively could get behind.
Now, comparing him and his brother a little bit, do you see him being able to develop any kind of point guard skill? The only reason I'm thinking about it is because we also still have Johnny Davis, who I think is going to get a ton of minutes. And I'm not saying that you define Thompson's position based on a guy like Johnny Davis, but I'm just trying to think of scenarios where they may want to get the most out of all their young guys this year to truly see what they have. So, and I know that we still have Chris Paul too, so a non-starter there who would be the starting point guard. But do you think that Assor has the ability to be a playmaker at the next level, or you think he's strictly just going to be more of a athletic scoring, attacking the rim kind of guy?
Yeah, I think you would be doing, the Wizards would be doing a disservice to their organization if they don't find out. Because sure. He definitely shows it on tape. I don't think it's to the level of Amen. But he damn sure can pass that ball. He has playmaking feel, not just for a 6'7" guy, but just in general. Like, he can run pick and roll. I think they should explore it. Or maybe he's not a full time point guard, but he's a guy that, you know, he plays the wing, and you can run pick and roll with him. You can run some sets where he's the primary ball handler. But maybe he's not your full-time point guard. I think they should definitely explore that. And given the transition they're in with their rebuilding of the roster, this is a perfect opportunity to do that.
Yeah, I mean, right now, he would be the main ball handler brought in from day one, because who else is going to do it? Davis didn't prove a lot last year. Denny's still not a primary ball handler. Kispert's not a ball handler. We'll see what happens with Chris Paul. Obviously, if Chris Paul's on the roster, he's going to probably have the highest usage rate. But after that, I mean, Assor Thompson is the guy that you probably, in our case, you want to have all the offense run through. And your point about, you know, maybe not necessarily being the full-time point guard, I think how modern NBA offenses are ran, I mean, they're ran through the two or the three if they're an elite level player, like bringing the ball up, like you said, running pick and roll, running sets. So the term point guard, it's kind of loss nowadays because your best bucket getter on the wing or from the guard spot is essentially initiating most of your offense. So no, it's not point guard, but it's your primary initiator. And I think that that's a role that he could thrive in here.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's so athletic. His first step is so crazy. Like, I feel like you would be doing him a disservice just sticking him in the corner and waiting for somebody to pass it to him. Like, no, put that ball in the boy's hands and let him take a screen and see what the hell he does with it.
How do you like our roster right now as it currently stands from a rebuilding standpoint? Out of our young guys, have you seen enough to where you like some of these other guys moving forward? We know that it's a big year for Denny. It's a contract year for him. So he's really going to have to go out there and earn it. The good news for him is I don't think there will be a lot of other players that would have much priority over him if he is indeed a Wizard on opening night. We've talked about Chris Paul, Porzingis, whoever we pick at eight. But I think that Denny would have a much larger role this year. Kispert, who will probably be a starter this year. Johnny Davis, who I think is going to have a bounce back year too. But are any of these guys to you, maybe not pillars, but are they pieces that you consider keeping moving forward?
It depends on what you're doing with the rest of your roster. Like I love the idea of Gafford developing here if you decide to move on from KP. Because I can really envision him a starting center, you know, with a pick and roll point guard, or, you know, just a pick and roll threat that can throw it up and, you know, he could just kill that way. I mean, I think he could be a double double guy. If you put a pick and roll partner with him, so I like the idea of Gafford, but like I said, if you're moving on from KP, and I think Kispert fits in a modern NBA offense, you know, as a role, as a movement shooter. Because, I mean, he's damn near a 50-40-90 guy in year two. So I think that's only going to go up as he further adjusts his body and his mechanics and the speed of the game. His shooting is only going to get better. And he's doing that without a top-flight point guard on the roster. So imagine if you got, you know, premium point guard play that allowed him to get more open shots. I mean, his shooting could go through the roof. So I would say those two. I think Denny is going to be tricky because, you know, he was drafted for his offense, and then that ended up being the worst part of his game. And for a guy that had this playmaking reputation on a team that did not draft a point guard, right? That did not have, outside of the Russell Westbrook year, which I believe was Denny's rookie year, you didn't have premium point guard play. So it's like, if you couldn't find a niche as a playmaker then, well, how are you going to find one having the ball if we go and actually draft a point guard that we believe in? And we want to develop as that guy, as a lead ball handler, when are you going to get those reps? So, you know, say for instance, if they draft for Anthony Black or they draft for Oscar Thompson, well, those guys are going to get reps over Denny as a primary ball handler, running pick and roll and bringing the ball up the floor. So are we going to then use that as kind of an excuse to say, oh, well, you know, he's not getting the reps, he's not getting the opportunity to do what he does best? Well, if you got a guy coming in that's just as big as you, that's projects as a better scorer, better shooter possibly, and a better passer, rim finisher, then can you blame the organization for kind of leaving you by the wayside? So I think it depends. Like, now if we go, like, you know, if we take a Taylor Hendricks, then I think those playmaking opportunities would be available for him to kind of expand his game in a big year four, a contract year for him. But if we go guard playmaker, which it sounds like that's their intention, I just don't know where he's going to get that rope to kind of further develop his game. And then with Johnny Davis, it's just, he was so bad as a rookie. I don't know what you can bank on. Like, I just think anything he gives you this year, I just think is a bonus. And you just hope for the best. Like, I think he has the defense to stay on the court, but his offense has a long way to go, because he's going from being a primary on-ball wing player to now have to be this kind of catch-and-shoot guard on the big stage in the big boy league. So we'll see. But I would say for now, Kispert and Gafford, I can see real defined roles for them. Denny and Davis, it's kind of TBD.
Yeah, I think the key thing for Denny is just his standing three-point percentage is going to have to go up. I mean, for the year, in order for the front office to want to consider giving him an extension, I mean, it's great what you do on the defensive end, but in an offensive league, you have to be able to give something on the other end. And if you just want to be a specialist, then that's fine. But that specialist, that probably doesn't warrant getting a contract extension. And if it does, I mean, we're talking like $8-9 million. So it maybe someone will throw him a big offer sheet and continue to bank on his development. But I mean, for me, he's going to have to be like a 37% three-point shooter this year to have any sort of relative value to this team going forward, because this organization doesn't owe Denny anything now. This is a new regime. So If they decide going forward that he's not the guy, you know, maybe that's someone that they consider trading, which I think will be likely because of the restricted free agency. So if they decided to move on, I think it'd be via trade. Or if they do end up keeping him and going into free agency, they could just flat out renounce his rights and elect not to bring him back. So Johnny, I still think I'm still going to have I have hope for Johnny. I think that he'll end up being decent. The one thing I'm really excited for this year is Summer League. It's going to be really, really fun. We've already heard that Victor Wembanyama is probably not going to play because the season extended. I wonder if it'll be the same for Koulibaly. But either way, Summer League this year should be flames. I can't wait for it.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely going to be interesting, man. I think it's going to be some guys that show out, man, because just they've been playing high-level basketball against grown men for a long time. And, you know, they're coming in a draft now in a summer league setting. You're just going to give them the ball and let them do, you know, play free. I think it's going to be some guys that put some numbers up, man.
Is there any last-minute draft talk from rumors or speculation that you wanted to go over that you've seen and give your thoughts on it? I know that we mentioned a little bit earlier, like I keep seeing Max Lewis late in the first round. And this is a guy that, I mean, we talked about, would we consider taking him at 8? So I wanted to get your thoughts on that specifically. And then anything else, any other thoughts you have on the draft before your guys' live stream tomorrow, then yeah, let's get it all out.
Yeah, so I would say, you know, regarding Max Lewis, I mean, I haven't heard much about his workouts. I mean, I saw the one he did with Portland, but I would imagine they're looking at him in that range with the 23rd pick they have. I honestly don't understand why he's consensus so low. Like right now, I'm looking at a rookie scale, and they have him consensus at the 28th pick, so that's damn near the second round. I don't get it, because I think he's one of the most complete. I think he has one of the more complete offensive packages out of any of the guys in this draft. Like a 6'7", 7-foot wingspan, a guy that can get you 19 points, 3-4 assists, and another six or so rebounds. And you can maybe project out his defense with his length and athleticism. I don't see how that's a guy that's picked in the bottom, you know, late 20s. Like, that just doesn't make sense to me, unless you're just saying, oh, you know, he was at Pepperdine and they had a losing record. So if you're really that good as an NBA prospect, why did your team have a losing record? So But outside of that, just looking at his tape, I'm like, to me, like, he's in my top 10. So I, you know, I'm obviously probably biased on this, but I can only go off what I see. I don't really, you know, the consensus boards, I, you know, don't really move me much. But I think if you're getting him at pick 28, that's a goddamn steal to me.
And we talked about it a little bit before we started recording, but this would be a draft. If I were Wizards fans, I would pay attention to the Lakers pick. I would pay attention to the Clippers pick, because those are picks that could end up being rerouted to us if Chris Paul is dealt somewhere else. And maybe not just that, maybe other teams. Again, we don't know what teams they're going to try and get involved in this Bradley Beal trade. So I would just say to Wizards fans, pay attention to specifically who the Clippers take at 30, and just other teams in the first round in general, because again, you know, but we never know what's going to happen with the aftermath and the completion of this trade. So not just number 8, but look who goes after, because you never know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we still waiting on more details on that Beal trade, and I think it's going to ultimately expand to a 3-team deal if they do move off CP3, and then we'll be able to see, you know, what we really get out of that move.
Yeah, I mean, you would imagine it would be this 30th pick, and then we get maybe like Marcus Morris and Robert Covington or Nick Batum, some sort of combination of that. But again, I want to just look at the Clippers. Maybe another team comes up here that we're not considering right now, but I would bet it'll be one of the LA teams. Chris Paul's family is still out that way, so I would bet it'll be the Clippers. But again, you never know. So watch out for who the Clippers take at 30. Sure. Anything else you got?
That was all I had, man. I'm just excited for the draft, man. I legitimately cannot wait. Like, this is probably the most excited I've been for a Wizards draft probably since we had the number one pick to get Wall.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Because again, we knew that we were taking Beal, but even then it was like we had our franchise guy in John, so it's like, okay. Otto, we knew was going to be the guy, but that draft was horrible.
Right.
Then we had like Oubre, Troy Brown, all those Tommy picks. Like, nothing really moved us. This guy that we take here at 8 has the chance to be the Wizards franchise player. So, you know, it's not a for sure thing. It's still the 8th pick. It's not the first, but there have been franchise players taken at or around this pick. So, and then considering the hype around this draft, it wouldn't surprise me if whoever we picked at 8 ended up being the franchise guy at some point. And that's a very high expectation to place on a guy. So I'm not sure that should be the expectation, but I think just to be a multi-time all-star, maybe make an all-NBA or two, yeah, it'd be kind of nice.
Yeah, it would be nice, man, to get a prospect. Like I said, the fan base can get behind. So, it would be nice, man.
Well, that's going to go ahead and cut it for us today. But go ahead and quickly, I know we did this before, but let the people know about your guys' live stream tomorrow and what that entails.
Yeah, for sure. So we're going to be basically doing a live stream, kind of following the draft and kind of making our suggestions on who guys should pick as the board flows down and who we think should go, you know, for the Wizards, of course, as the draft unfolds, man. And like I said, it's, you know, it's going to be for a good cause. Matt Moderno, I'm sure you guys that listen, follow him on Twitter, Believe Podcast. He has all the details there, but I think he's going to be streamed on, I think we're doing it on YouTube, I believe. So, yeah, just follow for details, and it should be a fun night, man. I'm excited. It's the most excited I've been for a draft since Wall's draft. So,
if you're not already subscribed to our podcast, please make sure that you are. Rate us 5 stars and leave us a kind review. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.